from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio. Welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll take a look at a collection of mysteries called Hoosier Hoops and Hijinks.
I'll get a preview of Indianapolis's next TEDx event.
And I'll test out some of the furniture in the Fearless Furniture exhibit at the State Museum. Plus, there'll be our arts counter we call
What'll We Do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Speed City chapter of Sisters in Crime has released its third mystery short story anthology, Hoosier Hoops and Hijinks. Travis DiNicola spoke with authors Brenda Robertson-Stewart, Tony Perona, and Dave Reddick about the new collection.
Brenda, Tony, Dave, welcome to Art of the Matter. Great to have you in the studio.
Well, thanks for having us. Appreciate it.
Brenda, we're going to start with you, ladies first, and tell me a little bit more about what the Indiana Speed City chapter of Sisters in Crime is, and then we'll talk about this really fun book.
It is a fun book. Sisters in Crime is an organization that is international, and it has been in existence for 25 years, and the main purpose of Sisters in Crime is to promote women in writing in the field of publishing, etc., because we really feel that in the past, perhaps the men had an edge over us. They seem to get picked more than us. They get picked more in reviews and this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. However, we're not prejudiced. We take men, too.
Well, I noticed that. I mean, you got two guys with you here.
We're Mr. Sisters.
We call them Mr. Sisters.
Mr. Sisters. Is that how it works? Okay. Because I was wondering, because I know I had seen some anthologies before, and they were maybe not exclusively, but mainly women. So when I saw the listing of the authors for this, I'm like, well, it seems great. It's a nice mix of
yes,
both men and women.
We think it's nice to have both.
Yeah. Well, excellent. Okay. And so a very congenial group, not too competitive, it seems. So, I mean, do you guys get together and share ideas? Is it mainly about having these anthologies printed every now and then?
No, we have a meeting every month, mm-hmm. and we have programs that we have set up at libraries, mm-hmm. children's writing contests, different things to promote writing in the general area.
And so beyond mysteries as well? Or I mean, it's very specific to mysteries.
It's pretty much mysteries, but we can have historical mysteries or different kinds of mysteries. You know, they don't
sure.
have
and
to
there
be
are so many.
Specific.
Very good. And then how did this come about to decide to have a basketball hoops theme book?
That was really Tom's idea, wasn't it?
It was our publisher's idea. Yeah. We have two books mm-hmm. out about racing, the 500 and
right.
the Brickyard.
Mm-hmm.
And then let me just say that the title of those are Racing Can Be Murder mm-hmm. and
yes.
Bedlam at the Brickyard.
Yes.
Nice.
For those of you who might be looking for them in bookstores.
They're still available.
They are still available.
They're still available. And we actually had some members who asked if we could do a basketball anthology as well. But Tom
sure.
was really, our publisher was really wanting to do. He likes basketball, so and we had a really good response from our members.
It's such a great variety of stories that I found in this book. I haven't had a chance to read all of them yet, but I mean, dealing with well, are they all classes of basketball in high school and college and professional and stories in the contemporary stories set in the past, quite an interesting mix. Tony, let me ask you about yours, because your story deals with a former player, a Senator Snow. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, it was. What I really wanted to do was work with these two characters that that were actually introduced in Racing Can Be Murder.
Right.
It was the first story they appeared in. And they're best friends. They're in their 70s. And they're part of a group of women that are trying to get through their bucket list of things. And they keep stumbling over dead bodies.
That's so inconvenient.
Yeah. And so I wanted to work with them again. And so I was trying to figure out how are we going to do this with basketball?
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed to me that Charlotte would be the person that would initiate this kind of scheme and keep Francine in the dark when she did it, and to get back at this Senator Snow.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was sort of the whole genesis of the whole thing, was just really wanting to work with those characters again.
One thing that's really fun as I was going through some of these, I mean, just all the different references, a number of the stories are set in Indianapolis, and all the different references to, you know, real places and real streets and real neighborhoods. Dave, with yours, Murder in the Doghouse, I mean, it's dealing with Hinkle Fieldhouse. And there's,
absolutely.
You know, you talk about Irvington and driving down Meridian Street and...
And the three characters in my story are graduates of Shortridge High.
Yeah, yeah.
Back in the good old days. And these are actually new characters. And that's the beauty, I think, Travis, of an anthology, is you can take some new characters and kind of have some fun with trying to develop them. These guys have been the best of friends all their life. And the one is an ex-cop. And how they sort of get into the story is... his partner, the son of his partner, who's now deceased, works at Butler as the safety public safety person there, and he invites them to come in and help out, and it kind of takes off from there. So it was a lot of fun to put together. I enjoyed the story very much, and I'm looking to maybe do some other short stories with the characters and possibly even a novel.
Is it an odd thing, or is it kind of a little bit of a freeing thing when you're writing about something, a location that you know so well? I mean, many authors will, you know, loosely disguise a location that they know and, you know, call a town a slightly different name and change the street names. But, you know, they've got a map in their head. But, you know, with this, you're kind of able to actually just say, yeah, look, so I, you know, pulled in a Hinkle Fieldhouse and here we are. You know, or talking about the State House with yeah. yours, Tony.
I mean, I find it to be a very freeing thing.
Yeah.
To me, because it is something that exists, and it's easier to place. And I think people have fun with it. As you mentioned, it's fun to think in those things. The series of novels that I do are set in real places, and although I've had to modify things from time to time, just because of trying to keep bad things out of places that are just nice places. But other than that, you know, most people really enjoy, I think, that sense of, oh, I've been there.
Absolutely. Like, I know this place. Yeah. You know, in some ways, maybe it makes the authors work a little bit easier if you know, you're kind of writing for a hometown crowd, I suppose. But Dave?
Well, yeah, and I think if you aren't careful about places, people will come back and correct you.
Well, sure.
Especially if you're writing about something locally. So you've got to be accurate. And but it's fun. And this book has been a lot of fun to put together. And one of the nice things about it too is, well, we have 17 stories in the book. We also have little sidebar stories of Indiana basketball legends. So. Mm-hmm. It's a nice combination of melding, you know, fictional stories with real-life Indiana basketball legends.
And there are plenty.
Yeah,
there are
which makes plenty a lot of fun.
Brenda, you get to go back in time a little bit
with a
young player who isn't exactly a legend.
No, he isn't. He's just an ordinary fellow.
Yeah.
But, you know, this actually happened when I was in high school, which was a long time ago. Anyway, this person actually shot the basket into the wrong basket, and the other team won the game. And I thought, well, how would a person like that feel if he did that? You know, he would just be absolutely mortified.
Sure, especially if it's in high school.
Absolutely, a high school player. So that was the genesis for my story. And some of the characters and the places and so forth, they're all the places are real because I was born in Lawrence County. So Olytic and Needmore and those towns are real, and I can't wait for the people down there to read the story.
This is really just a fun collection, quite a wide variety of authors. I know you got Hank Felipe Ryan to write the introduction. She's been on Art of the Matter before, talking about some of her works when she's been in town.
She's great.
Yeah, just a really fun mystery writer. But looking through this book, sort of some new writers that are kind of getting some more exposure.
Let me tell you about one who we're very proud of. Her name is Sarah Giroux. She's from Crawfordsville, and she's been a member of Sisters in Crime, our chapter, almost from the beginning.
From the beginning.
And she's a very quiet woman in her 70s. And the story, Breaking and Entering, in the book is her first fictional story. Hmm. And unfortunately, Sarah is going through a very bad illness at the moment. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of want to dedicate, and I wanted to mention her in this interview, because that's really kind of special.
Yeah.
And then some of the other people have been around. We've had a couple of new people come in that are writing, and they're like Tony and Brenda,
Terrence
published
Farity
authors.
Terrence
Farity. Yeah, I want to say that. I'm a fan of Terrence.
I went after Terry. I really went after Terry. Terry is such a fantastic
and
short
Brant
story
Dodson.
Writer, and
Brant
I just
Dodson
wanted him.
Too.
And Brant Dodson is in there, and he's good. And then there were some others that were surprises. I mean, people that we knew could write, but I'm
blanking.
There's so many
I'm
good
blanking.
Ones.
Yeah. No, Hartman.
Delanda Hartman.
Mm-hmm. D. Hartman. Her story was so delightful
to
read.
It was
one of those that the minute I read it, I knew I wanted it in the book.
Nice.
I mean, didn't you feel that way?
I
too?
Did. And yeah, Diana just, Katz about women's basketball at Purdue.
Yeah, that's the story that opens the book.
We put first in there. I thought that was a terrific, creative story. And she's written quite a few short stories. But and some of Suzanne Harding has written many, and Marianne Halbert. But they've all written short stories, but not full-length novels. But they are very good at... We encourage them to write short stories in order to, it helps them to prepare for writing a novel.
Sure, of course.
So it's a good experience for them. And we've had some really, really good experiences with these books.
Well, I know you've got a couple events coming up to launch the book, promote the book. Tell me a bit about those.
Well, our first one is going to be on Saturday, October the 12th, beginning at 1:30 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And we decided to have it at the Basketball Hall of Fame. It just seemed like
kind of
a logical place to have it. And the folks at the hall have been just wonderful. And so we'll be taking over their auditorium and having a little program, introducing some of the authors. And then the hall has been gracious enough to give us a group discount, so that if anyone who comes for the book launch will also be able to go through the museum, and it's a wonderful place if you haven't been there. So we certainly encourage people to come out and see that. We're also at that event, we'll be sponsoring, we have been sponsoring a writing competition for students at the Newcastle Community School Corporation, and we'll be awarding the prizes. And we have two categories, middle grade students and high school students, and we're looking forward to meeting some new authors and encouraging
them.
And that's really part of our mission as well, I think, not only to encourage our own members, but to,
absolutely,
to bring the next generation on. And then we will have a second launch in the following Saturday on the 19th at the Barnes & Noble bookstore at the Fashion Mall. And that's where we have our monthly meeting, and that one's going to start at 2 o'clock in the afternoon on that day. And we're looking forward to having a big crowd come out and see us, and
absolutely, the hometown
sign
crowd.
Some books for you.
Very good. Well, I've got one last question for you. As I said, I've had a chance to read some, not all, because I got my advanced copy and the book is just coming out right now. But does anyone actually get killed with a basketball in this? Can you tell me?
Well, I don't think we want to tell that.
Oh, okay. Leave me hanging then. No. Okay. Okay.
I think you'll just have to read them.
I'll just
all
have to read
and
find
out.
Excellent. Thank you all so much for coming in to Art of Matter. It's been a real pleasure chatting with the three of you.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Travis.
Appreciate it.
Travis DiNicola with mystery authors Brenda Robertson Stewart, Tony Perona, and Dave Reddick. The Speed City chapter of Sisters in Crime anthology, Hoosier Hoops and Hijinks, will be released Saturday, October 12th, beginning at 1:30 p.m. at the Indiana Basketball Hall of Fame Museum in Newcastle. The second launch is a week later on Saturday, October 19th, beginning at 2 p.m. at Barnes & Noble Booksellers in the Fashion Mall at Keystone at the Crossing. For more information, visit SpeedCitySistersInCrime.org, SpeedCitySistersInCrime.org. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
If you found yourself next to your computer or radio fascinated by a TED Talk, listen up. On Tuesday, October 22nd, Indianapolis will host its next TEDx event. The theme is Mix It Up. Sharon Gamble invited TEDx 2013 local partner Jim Walker of Big Car to our studios to learn more.
TED has been around for, you know, I was shocked to find out that it had been around for 26 years because it feels like the whole TED and TEDx movement has just gone like mad in the last handful of years. But maybe I should have you explain what TED is and then what its child, TEDx, is.
Sure. TED is a international nonprofit program, basically, that gets people sharing big ideas for the benefit of the world, really. It's an opportunity for people to hear about what's going on in other places. They can usually people experience it through videos online.
Mm-hmm.
They have conferences, big national and international conferences, but they also support and foster the local ones like TEDx that we can do in our city.
And there's not a person called TED behind it. It's called TED because?
Technology, entertainment, and design are the sort of the cornerstones of what people are talking about.
Sure. And it's astonishing how often there's overlap among those seemingly disparate fields.
Yeah, and I think that's sort of central to what TED is about, is how all those things come together. And the conferences and the talks themselves are usually addressing those crossovers.
Why is Big Car involved with TEDx? What is the connection there?
Well, for us, it's an opportunity to collaborate with others. So we have been producing this as our second year of working with the International School of Indiana. And also with this time, we've added the symphony, so the Indianapolis Symphony Orchestra, and Indiana Humanities. So for us, it's a great opportunity to team up with these other partners to put on this event. It's also an opportunity to showcase great ideas that are going on in our city, which is something that we're all about, trying to find ideas and innovate through that kind of stuff.
That's your mission.
Right.
That's Big Car's mission.
Yeah, that's what we're doing every day. And then it's also a great opportunity to bring in ideas from outside of the city. So we have speakers who are coming in from other parts of the world this time and from all around the country. And it's great to keep ideas fresh and to keep on understanding the context of what we're doing here, you know, in relationship to what's going on everywhere else.
And it's a cool balance of local speakers who have far beyond local reach and national and international speakers. I'm delighted that Tasha Jones, whose career has just been this amazing trajectory, is involved. Tell us a little bit about Tasha.
Yeah, I've seen Tasha perform over the years, and you know, she's a spoken word artist and a person who's really interested in social issues and, you know, what's going on in our city. And she's kind of branched out into becoming someone who's known beyond Indianapolis. And for us, it's great to have somebody who can be a great speaker and a performer like her with also a really great message. And so, you know, we were excited to have her be part of it.
If that name sounds familiar to our listeners, you may remember, gosh, it's been several years ago now. Tasha was on when she was a teacher here in Indianapolis and had this horrible experience where the kids were calling each other bad names and putting each other down. And she tried to figure out how to turn that on its head and how to get her students to give each other compliments, to tell each other they were beautiful, they were strong, they were creative, they were imaginative, whatever. And she's really created this kind of new field within and beyond education, but also mixing in being a hip-hop artist and poet.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, she's a great fit and a great example of our theme this year, which is Mix It Up. So when you can take things like poetry, hip-hop, and combine that with education, that's an interesting approach. And, you know, a lot of what people are going to be talking about, like Tasha, are ways to innovate and do new things by actually combining things that you might not expect to be combined.
What is the process for selecting the TEDx participants, speakers?
Yeah, we had a couple of different ways that we did this. One was an open call, and people sent in videos and let us know what they wanted to talk about. And it wasn't just an audition for them in terms of how they would be as a speaker, but it was really an audition of their idea.
Hmm.
And then a whole big group of people. We have a steering committee of more than 50 different people who were involved in helping with things like that selection process. And so we sort of drilled that down and picked a group from that submission process. And then there were others that the steering committee identified from around the country that and around the world that we wanted to invite. And we started inviting people and ended up with the group that we have.
And what's the connectivity to TED at the national level? Is there, do you have to jump over any hurdles to satisfy them that you're, quote unquote, representing their brand correctly at the local
level? Yeah, they have a lot of guidelines for how you need to do the branding. Also for just how you structure your conference.
Mm-hmm.
So they have requirements that include TED content, so some videos that are in there,
mm-hmm.
And then just maybe suggestions and guidelines to kind of keep these things. So if you go to one here and you go to one in another city somewhere else, it's not going to be a totally different thing. But they do leave a lot of room for the organizers to create their own event.
I want to get back to the speakers in a moment, but I want to ask, so if somebody comes to the October 22nd event, are they just sitting and listening, or is there a way that the attendees, the audience members, can get involved in some way?
Yeah, and another thing that Big Car is really all about is engagement of the audience, and even just blurring the lines between audience and the artist or whoever, so everybody's kind of a participant. So the nature of a conference with speakers, you are going to sit and listen to a degree, a big chunk of the day, but a big part of what we're working on is how we design the experience so that you're engaged, and so you're, from the moment you come in and make your badge, you're going to be getting creative and thinking and having opportunities to interact with other people, talk with other people, reflect on what's being said on the stage, share your views, and get creative and make things yourself that day.
Starting with making your badge, right?
Right, yeah.
So it's not one of those where you show up and they've all been computer printed.
Right. So we're going to do something a little different. Last year, we had one where you just got to make use stamps to put what your interests were on the badge. And then we had caricature artists who would draw your picture to put your picture on there, and or you could select some others that were on stickers that were drawn by artists. And so you had a really unique badge. This year, I don't want to give away all the surprises, but this year we're doing something different that'll kind of help guide the day and, you know, give people a chance to mix it up with other people and maybe help create some teams a little bit so that you can identify with other people who are at the conference and connect with them.
In the category of mixing it up, what is the most unusual mix of your 20-some speakers as far as maybe the speaker's background and what they're talking about or the two fields a speaker is bringing together? What kind of jumps out at you?
One of my very favorite ones is a guy named Stephen Johnson. So he's he's from Sacramento, California. And he's from California. He worked in Sacramento at the newspaper there. And he is kind of an inventor of ludicrous things that are impossible. And he does,
I like him already.
Yeah, he's really great. And he does it through drawing, basically. So he draws and imagines these inventions. And he's been doing this for a long time.
He's like 78, right?
Yeah, he's in his 70s. And he's just got this really great way of thinking about things. And some of his work reminds me a lot of even somebody like Kurt Vonnegut, where they're sort of thinking about what is ridiculous about our society, and then how can inventions like, you know, inventing a golf machine that you take out on the golf course that plays golf for you so you don't have to actually swing the club, you just push a button. But, you know, it's not that far removed from playing Wii golf or Wii bowling.
Absolutely.
You know? So, and he was coming up with that stuff back in the 70s and 80s, you know, and into the 90s, that really reflected on the path that we have gone in our society. Things like, you know, anticipated things like Google Glasses back before you even knew that there was digital technology.
Sure. So it's a new way of pointing out maybe some absurdities and giving people a fresh perspective, a new lens to look through.
Yeah, and then on the other hand, he's also asking people to be inventive and to think of possibilities. So it's a commentary, but he's not always, you know, being satirical. He's also dreaming of crazy things, you know, like a car that's also a hot tub, you know, stuff like that.
Hey, that's...
It wouldn't be that bad, would
yeah,
it?
Yeah, right?
You could do a lot while you're driving.
As long as it has automatic pilot, so right. If the driver gets really relaxed, she's right. Not MIA. So there's a great local representation, including Kristen Wright from the Exodus Refugee Immigration Project. What's the connectivity there? Tell us about her.
You know, she just has been working with immigrants and refugees, and you know, this is also a passion of ours because we are located in one of our projects out in the Lafayette Square International Marketplace area, and you know, we've seen that this is a great way for people to mix it up in terms of connecting with other cultures. And you know, I think you lose a lot of opportunities when you don't know other people who are even here. I mean, you don't have to travel the world to learn about other cultures. You can also just travel across Indianapolis or meet somebody else. And I think talking about that topic, about the benefits and the strengths for our society of getting to know other cultures and finding how we can grow through this knowledge and through these connections, I think is an important thing to address. And it has to do with mixing it up in a different way than inventions, but it's still, you know, the same, addressing that same idea.
Sure. Take off your hat of TEDx impresario for a second and put on all the hats you've worn in this community in your past couple of decades of, I mean, you've been a journalist more than one place. You created Big Car and a number of other not-for-profit entities and initiatives. What's the biggest change you've seen in Indianapolis over the years you've been working to be a part of those changes?
I think, you know, one of the things that used to be here, I was just talking about this with someone the other day, is we're getting more confident and we're having more things to do and more opportunities. And I think part of that is that people have seen that they can do it. And so more people see that they can do it and are inspired to do things, and then they do. And so you don't have everything sort of focused on only institutions doing things. You have a lot more people who are kind of DIY and are going to go ahead and just go for it and are going to make things happen and aren't going to wait. And I think, you know, when we started here more than 10 years ago with what we're doing now, there wasn't as much of a culture of taking those chances. And, you know, I think that even when you look at Spirit and Place Festival, which is the focus of its theme this year is risk, I think there's a lot more risk that people are taking. And a lot of these things that we didn't have before, like a TEDx in Indianapolis, you know, we just met up with the International School and the IMA last year and decided to just do it. And we didn't put a lot of time into planning it in advance of deciding to do it. We just said, we'll do it.
Or enumerating the reasons you couldn't do it.
Right. We just hopped right in it. And I think there's there are more and more people and groups who are taking those kind of chances and saying, yeah, we should have that. Why not? Yeah, let's do it.
And why not me?
Right. Yeah. And not just saying, well, somebody really ought to do that.
Yeah.
You know?
So you're in the, picture yourself, you're in the lobby at Hilbert Circle Theater, end of the day, October 22nd. What do you want over here?
Last year we were really excited because we felt like people took away from that not only the things they learned, but also things they learned from the experience and maybe took that to their place, their job, their organization. And I want to hear what people are talking about that might be that kind of thing, where this is the thing that they took away from what they learned or what they heard, but also what they want to do now. So, you know, we want to inspire people to go and do things themselves and to be borrowing ideas, adapting ideas, bringing things together to create new ideas that are also going to be acted upon. That's not just an idea that sits in a piece of paper in their mind, but it's something that they are going to go and do.
Sharon Gamble with Big Car's Jim Walker. Indy's TEDx 2013 is Tuesday, October 22nd at the Hilbert Circle Theater, and you can learn more and get your ticket at TEDxIndianapolis.com. Hey, Sharon.
Yes, Travis.
Have you started thinking about what you're going to dress up for? Is Halloween?
Oh, you know, I haven't. I need to start working on that.
Yeah, some great ideas out there. I think you could go as like Miley Cyrus or or maybe the government shutdown.
Oh, that would be fun. I don't know.
Well, we'll think of some other scary things to do or dress up as on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
Boo. Oh, very good.
For October. The middle of October. How would you dress as the... Never mind, the government shutdown.
Yeah. Okay. So
in a bipartisan way, I'm sure.
In a completely different note, right. Actually, coming up at the end of the month, on Sunday, October 27th, the Bureau of Jewish Education is going to be welcoming Roberta Grossman, who's a film producer. And Ms. Grossman is going to be here for a special screening of the film Hava Nagila, which is a documentary, and it sounds like a lot of fun. It's kind of this romp through history and mystery and meaning of this great Jewish standard, this great fun song. And it interviews, there's interviews with Harry Belafonte and Leonard Nimoy, Connie Francis, Glenn Campbell, Regina Spektor. And it sort of follows this party song through all of its roots and then through where it is now. And they, as they say, high on fun and entertainment. Special screening is going to take place at Latitude 39 on 82nd Street. Again, that's October 27th. And you can get more information about purchasing tickets, and there's a dinner and all this stuff, at either 255-3124, again, 255-3124, or you can go to bjeindy.org. That's Bureau of Jewish Education, indy.org.
Hey, if on your list of guilty pleasures you have watching the ABC show called Scandal about the White House, where the president's press secretary and the president are having a, not very clandestine relationship. And even if you don't watch Scandal, you might want to watch this week, because tonight, if you're listening to us Thursday night, later tonight, on Scandal, a track by our own pianist-composer, Becky Archibald, is going to be played. That's so cool. And
that's awesome. Congratulations,
I know. I haven't yet gotten the story of how she got that placed, or how she submitted it, or what happened, but I'm sure we'll get the story down the road. And by the way, you can watch that program online if you're hearing us on Saturday morning and you're like, oh, I want to hear that. So you can go to abc.com.
Hey, Heartland Film Festival is really just about a week away, and it is the biggest one ever. Record-breaking year for submissions, and they are an Academy Award qualifying festival for the short film category, and there's lots of cool stuff going on. They're doing some Hollywood premieres as sort of bookends to the festival. Opening night, the film Gimme Shelter that stars Vanessa Hudgens, and the closing night event, The Book Thief, that stars Oscar winner Jeffrey Rush, and there's going to be some really cool stuff going on throughout the whole festival. There's going to be a lot of celebrities in town, and they're saying they're going to have over 100 filmmakers in town for their 134 independent films from all over the world. Very cool stuff. You can get more information at trulymovingpictures.org, and you want to get the whole schedule and start planning out your Heartland Film Festival experience.
Be careful where you walk. You're going to trip over celebrities during the film festival. Hey, next Thursday, the 17th, Roger Schmelzer and Mark Timko are presenting another one of their cabaret performances at Chef Joseph's. And they're actually doing three sets next Thursday night. That's the 17th, between 7 and 10. You can come for dinner or drinks or both, and music. There's no cover charge. You need to call them for reservations, though. And this is lovely mix of traditional pop and jazz tunes and torch songs. And it's a great intimate place to hear music. So check that out next Thursday night.
Very cool. Hey, actually, something going on in November, but it's not too early to start planning for this, is a special series called Read Local that Book Mamas, the bookstore in Irvington, is doing. They're co-sponsoring with the Irvington Library. And each Tuesday evening in November, they're going to have local authors available to discuss their books and answer questions and sign and all that sort of stuff. All the programs begin every Tuesday night at 6:30 p.m. in the Irvington Library. That's on East Washington Street in the conference room. And books will be provided there that you can buy if you want from Book Mamas. And listen to the schedule. Local History is the first one on Tuesday, November 8th. And that includes Nelson Price and Julie Young and Nancy Niblack Baxter and Robert Snow. And then on the 12th of November, on that Tuesday, novel set in Central Indiana with Tom Black, Forrest Bowman, Dick Cady, and Mia Castile. And then Professors will be featured on Tuesday, November 19th with Michael Dolly, Allison Lynn, Robert Rabin, Mitchell Douglas, and Karen Kovacic. And then they wrap things up with Dan Carpenter on Tuesday the 26th as a newspaper columnist. Should be very, very fun. And then actually there's a tag on with Edward Kelsey Moore, who's just a great speaker, with his book, The Supremes at Earl's All You Can Eat. And that's actually in December on the Tuesday. But this is all at the Irvington Public Library in conjunction with Book Mamas in Irvington.
Love that. Love that. Some of those names may sound familiar because you've either read their works or heard them interviewed. Michael
That's
Daly,
right.
Allison Lynn, happen to be a husband and wife. Dan Carpenter coming up on a episode soon to be featured on The Art of the Matter. Hey, get your party on this Saturday night. It is time for Orange.
That's right.
The great interactive experience of art and music this year at the Indiana State Fairgrounds in Centennial Hall and the Dow AgroSciences Celebration Park. Forecast looks good for that. Starts at 8 o'clock Saturday night, goes to 2 o'clock Sunday morning. More information at orangeindy.com. That's O-R-A-N-J-E-Indy.com. Sorry, it's a 21 and over event, $20 at the door, but just kind of like an amusement park full of different experiences. See art,
That's
make
a great way
art,
to describe it.
Eat and drink cool things, listen to great music, dance, be yourself.
Yeah, always a fun, fun party. Those guys know how to throw a great party at Orange.
Indeed.
Hey, Indie Acoustic Cafe series continues on, and they are bringing back Brooks Williams on Saturday, October 19th. He's got a brand new CD titled New Everything, and he was just recently named Guitar Magazine's one of their top 100 acoustic guitarists of all times. If you haven't been to one of the Acoustic Cafe series, they're great. They're really intimate, great concerts down at the Wheeler Community Arts Building in Fountain Square. You can get more information and get your tickets at IndieAcousticCafeSeries.com. Again, that concert with Brooks Williams coming up October 19th.
So you may have picked up on the fact that we're going to have a bicentennial in 2016, our state is, and Brick Street Poetry is working on a cool project that's actually listed on Power to Give. That's Power Numeral to Give. It is a fundraiser for a so-called birthday book of poetry, and the book's going to feature one poem from one poet in each of the state's 92 counties. So that's what the fundraising is about. Chase Bank is matching the first $500 in donations. The deadline for donations for this match is November 20th. If you want to find out more about the project and maybe suggest a poem from your favorite poet from a certain county, you can go to brickstreetpoetry.org. Shout out to Joyce Brinkman, who's coordinating that cool idea, brickstreetpoetry.org.
Very cool. Hey, and last thing I've got, Sharon, I promised you something a little scary, a little spooky.
Ooh.
Well, how about a silent horror film with live pipe organ music to scare up a classic Halloween movie? And that is going to be The Hunchback of Notre Dame. And they are showing this in the Grand Hall, Indiana Landmark Center, complete with spooky live organ accompaniment. It's very fun. Of course, you know, set in Paris. It's a great film with Lon Chaney and very, very cool stuff. They're also doing a vintage Laurel and Hardy short to complete the evening. There will be a cash bar. Of course, costumes are encouraged. And this is going to be on Halloween starting at 7 o'clock at Indiana Landmark Center. And it should be a lot of fun to check that out. Mwah. Well, that's all the spooky stuff we've got, Sharon.
Wait, I have one non-spooky thing to remind people. This is the opening weekend for the Matisse Show at
That's
the
right.
IMA. So go and live a life in full color and tell us what you thought.
Excellent. And we'll be back next week with more on that calendar we call
What'll We Do?
Boo.
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola.
If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on wfyi.org.
Daring designs and unparalleled artisanship best describe the fine art furniture presented in Fearless Furniture, the first juried exhibition of its kind, now at the Indiana State Museum. All the furniture is functional and created by artists with Indiana connections. Travis DiNicola spoke with David Buchanan, decorative arts curator, and Mark Rushman, chief curator of fine art for the Indiana State Museum, about the show.
Congratulations on what I think is going to be an absolutely outstanding show called Fearless Furniture. I know you've both been working on this for a while, and you're both smiling as we're about to start talking about this. Of course, I want you to describe the show for me in just a moment, but how did this come to be that the State Museum was able to put together this furniture show?
Truthfully, David? We started off with Rachel Perry, who used to be the curator of fine art, and Meredith McGovern talking about this idea and not sure that we could pull it off, mm-hmm. to be truthful, because we wanted studio furniture makers that had roots in Indiana, but we didn't know if we'd have enough to be able to do it. Mm-hmm. And we were very pleased that when we put out the call, we got a lot of responses and some really wonderful work.
And that's really the organizing factor here, is that all of the works, and there's, 30 pieces mm-hmm. in the show? Each one is created by an artist who either is from Indiana or lives here or went to school here right. or some sort of connection, right?
Right.
And certainly there's a number of Heron graduates that are included. Heron students, too? Is that correct?
Yes.
As well?
It's a mixture, everything from professors that chaired the department all the way down to students, and a number of alumni, obviously, too.
And then were there any other specifications as far as what the work needed to be like? I mean, furniture is sort of a very open term, of course.
It had to be functional. We didn't want it to be just an art show. We wanted these to be pieces that you could put into your house, you could use, you could love, or you could just sit and stare at them.
And so tables, chairs, bureaus, grandfather clocks.
Yes.
All of the
all
above.
All of the above, yes. We did limit it. We were afraid we might get doll furniture and things like that. So mm-hmm. they all had to be human scale type pieces. They all had to be, we had a whole list of things they couldn't be, like made out of food, that type of thing.
No fire or water.
Yes.
Okay.
And we actually had one piece submitted that was, you could light it.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
It was a fascinating piece, but we're all going, I don't think we can see it in the museum.
So, Mark, tell me about your part of the process here as far as working on this show. And just, it had to be just fun, really, going through the submissions, I would imagine.
Oh, it's been great. As David said, this started with Rachel Perry, so I inherited the project from her.
Mm-hmm.
And the three of us have put a great deal of work into this, especially Meredith, who's been communicating with the artists and making sure everything's brought in and photographed.
And again, Meredith McGovern is the Arts and Cultural Collections Manager.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, it's been a learning process. But then, when I was in the gallery, I was working with artists, talking with them about their work, arranging for the publicity for exhibitions and talking mm-hmm. with the press, as we're doing here today. I was familiar with the process, but each time you do a show, particularly a show of this magnitude, there are going to be surprises and there's going to be a great deal of excitement that goes along with it. And I don't think anybody's going to be let down by the quality of this exhibition.
Now, you mentioned, of course, you used to have the Rushman Gallery, and I was trying to think if I ever had seen a furniture show there, and I don't believe I ever did.
Many years ago,
okay.
I was doing furniture exhibitions. In fact, Phil Tennant, one of the artists that is mm-hmm. in this exhibition, now retired from Heron School of Art, I represented Phil for many years.
Okay.
I work with a couple of other furniture artists from different parts of the country, so I do have experience in this, but certainly nothing on this scale.
Is there any significant difference in terms of working with a furniture artist as opposed to working with a painter or sculptor?
At the heart of it, they're all artists.
Mm-hmm.
And these artists, while they are furniture makers, if you spend a little bit of time with them, they end up talking the same language as a painter or a sculptor or whatnot. They just have to be dealing with, in some cases, different materials they're, in this case, functional work. But there really isn't a difference. It's about their passion for their craft, their commitment to their high level of execution of the work. So, again, there's very little difference.
David, one thing that I find very exciting about this show is that the State Museum has had some really amazing shows of late, but most of them are often traveling shows or shows, you know, from other museums. I mean, this is entirely an original show for the State Museum, which just had to be very exciting to work on. I also saw that it's sponsored in part through the Arts Council of Indianapolis.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it is.
That's very cool.
Which we are very appreciative of the work that they do. Yeah, and And like I said, I was a little nervous about it, but the works that have just turned out have been incredible. It's really neat, too, that they were offered from as far away as Hawaii and Maine. So, and part of our requirements for these pieces is that the artists themselves had to bring them and take them away.
Oh, really?
Yes. So the fact that some artists were willing and one was accepted from Hawaii to do that, to us, really said a lot about what people wanted to be a part of as far as this state.
How very cool. Yeah, because I would imagine, I mean, just from the little bit of a preview I've seen of some of the work, some of them would not be the easiest to transport.
Yes.
So what I want to ask both of you right now, if you would, pick out one or two pieces just to, we obviously can't go through all 30, but that you could maybe describe a bit for us and leave us as radio listeners imagining what we want to see.
Well,
Mark,
I'll go first.
Yeah.
Was visiting with Rob Millard Mendez at the University of Southern Indiana over this past weekend. And he has a piece in the exhibition called Juggernaut Table. And it's very different from many of the other pieces in the show because it incorporates found objects. So you have an ammunition box, which is the primary container at the top, the tabletop. And then he has found objects, wood, metal, various other components that make up this piece. And, you know, it's called the Juggernaut Table. I'll leave your imagination open for that. I don't want to give everything away. Mm-hmm. But I think it illustrates how creative these people are and the fact that you can have an exhibition like this where you'll have very traditional designs, mm-hmm. very high-tech designs, and then you'll also have something that is made out of found objects, recycled materials. And I think it speaks a lot to the creativity of these artists.
I mean, really, all styles seem to be represented in what I've seen so far, from
Correct.
Very traditional to contemporary, but again, all of it functional. David, what's one piece you'd like to pick out?
Wow.
Four and two.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I just absolutely love Randy O'Donnell's work. His is very traditional mm-hmm. to the extent that he uses 18th century tools to create the pieces. His work is just, to me, jaw-dropping when you look at the details of what he creates. I think the other one is the Dustin Headley's Fluxus. That one is based on his view of the White River, and mm-hmm. there's all these wonderful ripples taking place throughout that table. Not only is it because of the way he's cut the wood, but also how he's incorporated all the graining of the wood itself. So when you stand and stare at it, even though there's no motion in it whatsoever, it's fully waves and wind moving through the waves and rippling, and it's just an incredible piece.
Now, one of the pieces that you were giving me a little preview of actually does move and conform to the body, right?
Yes.
Tell me a little bit more about that one.
That one's a lot of fun, and his name is just totally escaping me right now. But anyway, it's a bench, one mm-hmm. that you sit on. It's all solid wood. Steve Sander is his name. But it's made, it's a large rectangle with hundreds of little 3/4 by 3/4 inch wooden dowels. Mm-hmm. So it looks very uncomfortable to sit on. But when you sit every one of those dowels moves, so it just totally conforms to your body.
Wow.
So it's really comfortable.
That's
the only
neat.
Unfortunate part about it is we can't show, we can't have people sitting on it.
I was wondering about that, yeah.
We've actually done pictures to show mm-hmm. people how it does work.
Because even though the furniture is functional, these are all, I mean, really one-of-a-kind pieces.
Yeah.
And as part of the museum exhibit, you can't actually sit on the furniture.
Right. you can't sit, walk, or all of those things. There will also be a video in there. Meredith went around and Leslie Lawrence went around photographing and videoing these artists at work. So you'll see many of the artists, not all of them, but many of them in their studios working away and talking about their craft.
Excellent. And this show runs through May 25th, so plenty of time to make sure that everyone can get out and see it. I know, of course, there's a couple different events that are going on at different times, lectures and things like that, that people can get more information at the Indiana Museum website about. Mark, anything else you wanted to add about this show? Because this is a pretty exciting exhibition, I think, for the State Museum to be doing.
It is. I think when most people think of the State Museum, they think of historical works, very traditional works, much older pieces. And this is really new territory for us. And we have really embraced the challenge, and we really wanted to step up and put a tremendous exhibition together. And, I congratulate Meredith and David on doing a wonderful job. I really think everybody's going to be pleased with it. Their feedback so far has been tremendous, and we're looking forward to the opening on the 5th.
Travis DiNicola with David Buchanan, Decorative Arts Curator, and Mark Rushman, Chief Curator of Fine Art for the Indiana State Museum. For more information about the Fearless Furniture Exhibit, visit indianamuseum.org. Again, indianamuseum.org. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com. Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next week, Thursday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 7 a.m., when I'll get a preview of the IU theater season.
I'll find out about a Heron alumni reunion and art exhibit.
And I'll talk with an artist who learned to paint after he lost his eyesight.
Plus, there's that arts calendar we call
What Do We Do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on 90.1 WFYI Public Radio.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Central Indiana and Indianapolis. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's show was edited by Melissa Davis and produced by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.